setting my table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
Protection.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Right.
Work.
Peace.
Movement.
Movement.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
Expression. Expression. Expression.
Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Progress.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solid.
I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on SaskTel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. I'm Jim Hutchings, and with me is my special guest Ahmed Sabawi, who is an academic, a journalist, and a human rights activist who is particularly concerned with the plight of people living in Gaza. Welcome, Ahmed.
Thank you.
And the reason we're here today, basically, is because it's an anniversary. It's a very unhappy anniversary of the last conflict, the open warfare in Gaza. And we talked about this earlier this year, and I understand you have a video. I haven't seen it yet, but we saw the rough cut and played some audio from it in January, and we talked about it. And so anyway, I'd like today to talk about Gaza and how we've arrived at that point, and then we'll widen the discussion to what's going on in the Middle East and why it's going on. And It's a very, very complex issue, and I guess what we want to do is try to see some light at the end of the tunnel. And you know, the more educated and aware we become of the issues like this around the world, I think the better equipped we are to tell our elected representatives what needs to be done, because they seem to be lost. To tell you the truth, Ahmed, that's the way I feel. And the actions that have been taken by our government, the Western governments in general, just seem to be so counterproductive in a way. And I don't know whether I'm stating this right or not. You can correct me. I just feel like the Western governments are taking a hornet's nest and just putting a stick in it and twirling it around, and that's how they expect to. It's like the old saying that you sometimes see in some office walls, the beatings will continue until morale improves. This is the way I think the actions of the West are affecting the situation in the Middle East generally. And, boy, we need some improvement there. I don't know. What do you think, Ahmed? Am I overstating or am I distorting? Or what's your thought?
No. The wars over there must put to a halt, at least, you know. And those kind of attacks, supposedly they should stop. In the question of the war in Gaza, after 1 year, as we arrive now, they get away with it. I mean, the Israelis killed in that war over 2,300 people. A lot of them, actually 60% of them, women and kids. And also displaced around 500,000 Palestinians. Destroyed 20,000 houses for just normal people. Regular families, and wounded 11,000. And with those kind of numbers and figures, we need to bring some people who are really in charge of committing those crimes. We should hold them accountable so they can not repeat this again. And also we should set a standard of not letting anybody commit wars or crimes just to be free without charge or without accountability on such an act. So for that reason, I do see that the lack of accountability and the lack of action from the international community is what give many people who intended to declare war and kill other civilians and kill other people just a free hand. And that should stop. This is where we have to interfere as an intellectual and as an activist and call for those people to be brought to justice for crimes they committed.
And you know, you look at the reaction of the world towards things that are going on in the Middle East. It seems like the people that should be doing something aren't. We have the United Nations, we have the Security Council, and by definition, the Security Council should be able to look at what's going on there, say this is not right, and if the combatants refuse to do the right thing or respond properly to resolutions of the Security Council, then they authorize a force to go in there and sort things out. But of course, what happens is we've got some of the big players who refuse to act.
Even if they want to act, sometimes you wonder why they are have a tight hand in acting. I mean, for example, President Obama recently foreign minister.
Yeah, John Kerry.
John Kerry, 32 times to the region.
Yeah.
And they put some effort to resolve it. But unfortunately, the Israelis reject such an effort by the United States. And you know that Obama was really unwilling to pressure them or to impose any kind of solution. And so he withdrew from the process. Mm-hmm. Of even, having some kind of settlement. And let me go a little bit back in the history. I mean, since the First World War and since the Great Britain, the UK took over that region, and they issued that became well-known Balfour Declaration, stating that, they are looking to give this country for one particular religion. And at the same time, they stated in that declaration that the rights for indigenous and local people should not be touched and should be kept, mm-hmm. Which is nothing implemented from the other side. The first part implemented, but the second part is not.
Right.
And also with the partition plan for Palestine in 1947. I mean, the partition plan was a clear, okay, to divide this country into two different people, you know. Actually, one religion, which is, they call it, you know, the Jewish state, and the other one is the Palestinian state. And unfortunately, we saw the first part of that plan implemented. But until now, I mean, there's no Palestinian states. So on and on and on for over a century now, on the same point where one part being neglected from his basic freedom, basic human rights needs and demand, and I mean, he being under siege and under torture and in prisons, and their own civilians being targeted, killed. Unfortunately, I mean, the international community, the United Nations, which is, they have tons of resolution on Palestine, and one of them is the partition. 181 is the right of refugee to return. And 242 is the decision on forcing Israel to withdraw its forces from West Bank and Gaza in 1973. More and more resolutions have never been implemented.
Right.
And when you ask them and when you try to investigate those kind of, there's a lack of action from the international community. For example, if another country committed such crimes or committed such an occupation against other people, you will see them how they will start sending troops and imposing sanctions and etc., etc., etc. In the case of Palestine, unfortunately, there is no action at all in taking those guys into courts or try to enforce them to stop the military occupation of West Bank mm-hmm. and Gaza, implementing United Nations resolutions, respecting human rights declarations, and respect the Fourth Geneva Convention, agreement. At least you need somebody to push them to do that. Mm-hmm. But, we don't see.
No, we don't. I'm just going to change focus here just for a minute, Ahmed, and I'd like to play the beginning of the audio from your video. And we did this in our January 9th program, so this is an excerpt from that. So we're going to change our focus now more specifically to this last conflict it was a year ago. So we'll get that started here. Let's see if I can get the technology to work for me. I think I can. Okay. I have to wake up my computer.
We are in Beit Hanun area, and this is a residential area, those buildings called Abraj and Nada. It's been completely destroyed by the Israelis in the last assault on Gaza. And many of those families who've been displaced still looking for shelters, still looking for a place to stay. And many people actually totally displaced and totally hopeless after those kind of building being destroyed. In Gaza, people are still looking for their own personal belonging. In Shija'iya neighborhood, people try to get anything out of their own destroyed houses. Ahjara. Yeah. Had the beta kada? Come on, I can second for you. In Gaza, destruction everywhere.
قلبي منذ لمدة يا رب ما غلبني غيرا منها يا رب يا رب أبوك يا أمّا مغدك يا أمّا انتكفنا يا أمّا نكفة كبيرة يا أمّا.
For the last 20 years, I think Gaza was in the eye of the storm. Since Oslo Accord was signed till today, the harvest of 20 years of so-called peace, obvious. It's a state of social, economical suffocation of Gaza Strip. And Gaza ended up with criminal, illegal, inhuman siege, sort of collective punishment, and should be ended, I mean, swiftly, immediately, completely and not partially. But it seems this criminal siege, which Israel, with the support of the Quartet, imposed on Gaza, was not enough to cripple Gaza, to de-develop Gaza, to make Gaza almost like animal farm, dumping to it some food and medicine by international community.
Here is some of the people who used to live in one of those houses, now staying in a tent. We are going to talk to them about what happened.
أنا بالنسبة لي لحالي كان عندي 27 واحد وهذا 20 نفر بسكن فيه. في منا في المدارس, في حتى مدارس تابعة للحكومة ونقلونا على الأنروا مدارس الوكالة.
Simply speaking, Gaza should be a special case in the human history. In such small, tiny, poor place was subjected to 7 years of blockade, where nobody was allowed to go out or to come in. Gaza was subjected to 3 wars in 5 years, where many people were killed, thousands were injured, thousands of houses were destroyed.
Political situation and its psychological consequences does not submit the normal criteria of trauma. When you talk about trauma, usually the criteria says that post-traumatic stress disorder. Post doesn't exist in Gaza. Since we were born in Gaza, since 48, and what we learned from our parents, grandparents, always we live in trauma, traumatic events. So we call it on trauma, on traumatic stress disorder, not post. Parents, grandparents, till now. So we cannot talk about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. The trauma is still on. I can give you an example, not so far. Within 6 years, this is the third Israeli offensive attack against Gaza.
Well, Ahmed, that segment, I think, really explains the sort of situation that people are living in now and have lived in for generations. You know, peace has not been experienced by generations of Palestinians. So, you know, you have to marvel at the inability of our... I don't know, the governments, the Israelis, the United Nations.
You know, definitely the Israelis at the first. Because the Israelis are the one who are really, you know, occupying and committing those kind of atrocities. And they continue, unfortunately. And they don't want, they deny the Palestinian people the freedom. You know, their own freedom of self-determination, their own freedom of having their own independent states and independent entity. They're still building settlements, confiscated land. They're still building walls, and they still deploy thousands of soldiers and drones, and they still put 1.8 million Palestinian in under siege in Gaza, and Gaza has become like open air prison. So, I mean, to end this situation is just in the hand of the Israelis, and they imagine that they are doing that because they care about their own security. But how on earth you can just jail whole people and claiming without even give them the basic needs, claiming that this is the only way that you will have security. I mean, this is like a, I mean, what you can call it, completely unaccepted argument. The Palestinian show in the past, and they still continue showing that they are willing to accept any kind of settlement offered by the Israeli, a serious one, not a, a cosmetic one. And they have the right to have their own, fulfill national aspiration, and they have the right to have independence and the freedom. Gaza must be open and must not be controlled by Israeli soldiers. Open the gates and close the gate. It's a completely open air prisons. And people must have their own freedom. This is something like I can't see anywhere in the 21st century. Like situation like that with a country which is impose all those kind of action and get away with that. And we have to find a solution to this, and the solution is well known. Like get out of the West Bank and Gaza and leave them alone. They have to to establish their own independence. You can't just control them and in implementing those policies of land grabbing and building new colonies here and there. That's not gonna continue. And they've been doing this for the last 70 years, so they should at least realize that they cannot continue.
You know, I wonder what do the Israelis, what is their end game? What do they want to achieve? Do they basically want to push the Palestinians into the sea, or do they see a country or a situation or an arrangement where people can live normal lives? And I just can't see where they're going. It seems like their attitude right now is if there's any pushback by the Palestinians, then they're going to push back, 10 times harder. There's only during the conflict, I think there were 6 Israelis who were killed by rocket attacks. Many more injured, but 6 Israelis killed. How many Palestinians were killed in that?
Oh, and just the last, in 2014, during the Israeli aggression in Gaza, they killed 2,339. And 490 Palestinian children out of that number. And as I said, we have 11,000 Palestinian wounded, 20,000 homes destroyed in Gaza, and 500,000 people being displaced from their own homes and places. So, who can tolerate such a crime? And why we should continue on the same path? Why the Israelis always find it easy for them to use force and excessive force against the civilian in Gaza?
I think that's the main complaint here is the excessive force, the force that's out of proportion, obscenely out of proportion to what Hamas is doing. I think there are a lot of people who take issue with the way Hamas is operating in Gaza. Unfortunately, they are the government in Gaza, if I'm not mistaken. And
well, they used to be some years ago. They are some kind of unity government over there.
Okay.
And they are not in the government.
Okay.
The popularity of Hamas, as you know, is not more than 20%. And but that doesn't mean that you don't like one group. You have to punish the whole population, and you want to justify that kind of punishment and crimes by saying, "Oh, I want to punish those guys." So I mean, punish those guys by killing a huge amount of civilians and destroying houses and etc. That doesn't really makes you a freedom fighter. You are an occupier.
Amin, I just want to read one excerpt here from this report. This is a UN Human Rights Commission report. And just one little excerpt. During the 51-day operation, the Israeli Defense Forces carried out more than 6,000 airstrikes in Gaza. This is the conflict a year ago. They carried out more than 6,000 airstrikes in Gaza, many of which hit residential buildings. The Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs found that at least 142 Palestinian families had three or more members killed in the same incident, amounting to a total of 742 fatalities. These are all civilians. All civilians. They're non-combatants. They're not involved in the conflict at all. They were just killed. Tawfiq Abu Jama, a Gazan father of eight, recalled, and this is in quotations, "I was sitting with my family at the table, ready to break the fast. Suddenly, we were sucked into the ground. Later that evening, I woke up in the hospital and was told my wife and children had died."
Yeah, many, many, many cases like that. There are 70 families being wiped out completely. The father, the mother, and the kids completely. 70 families in this recent aggression on Gaza wiped out. This is the first time, I mean, that the massive bombing of Gaza is hurting everybody. I mean, my mom was part of that. I mean, she got a stroke because she couldn't run away from her apartment because there's no shelters. There's no safe place in Gaza.
Yeah.
Like all civilians, elderly people, they don't know what to do. And you know that with that kind of aggression and attacks and bombing, you don't have also basic needs like electricity, power, I mean, water. Everything is, I mean, you don't have even groceries or food. So everybody being under the attack.
Yeah. Well, we've got to take a break here now, Amin. And we've picked some music. So we'll start off with some music and perhaps raise the mood a little bit here. This has been getting a little down. So we'll be right back and we'll talk to Amin Sabawi about the anniversary of the Israeli Gaza attack a year ago.
تك يا محمد تك يا بليس
صحتي
الخيل ترقص في الميدان العريس
يا صلاتك يا محمد يا
خزات الشيطان
واحنا ماشينا من حارة لحارة واحنا خاطبنا بنت شيخ الإمارة
من هو عازم
Ahmed and I kind of were in conversation there, lost track of time. All of a sudden, the music stops. And we're going to continue talking about Gaza and the Middle East and what the world powers are doing and what, how we think perhaps they should be, how they should be reacting. I heard an interview on the CBC a little while ago. And a person from Germany was being interviewed. It was a program, I think, called Hard Talk, you know, on BBC, which was rebroadcast on the CBC. And this German person, he's Christian, and he's an activist. I think he's a blogger, and he's very, very much against what the West is doing in its approach to ISIS or ISIL. And his attitude is that the West should just get out. They're not what they're doing there is their presence, their very presence destabilizes the whole situation. And he actually visited people inside the ISIS community, and of course doing that with great trepidation. Given the record of ISIS, treating people from the West, but I think they viewed him as a supporter and a friend, and he was able to find his way back home and talk about it. And he was trying to, the people he was with were trying to convince him of the righteousness of their cause.
Let me interfere here.
Sure, okay.
Jem, the story of those religious fanatic groups actually is very strange.
Mm-hmm.
And in our region, a region which has got 2,000 years or more of living and living together, you know, mm-hmm. like I grew up in my street, there is a big church.
Right.
And in the next neighborhood, there is a synagogue.
Right.
So that kind of atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
and environment I grew up in, and I always, they talk about multi-faith, multi-culture, etc. I mean, I came from a society
sure.
where we all live together.
Yeah.
And no matter what is your religion, and what is your background, and this is not just me, my ancestor, we've been doing this and sharing this mm-hmm. land forever.
Right.
Those fanatic groups is really coming out of, a very suspicious ideology,
mm-hmm.
and nobody respects them even in that region.
Right.
And I do believe that the question of, force and using force toward those guys, I definitely don't want to see them taking the whole region into a stupid, fanatic way,
mm-hmm.
and it's completely unaccepted by the whole region and by the whole people over
right.
there. So, but I mean, treating that is not bombing and killing, and treating that is much more of a cultural awareness, economic, social, reform, but not by bomb and
mm-hmm.
by destroying and by deploying troops and here and there, because that's not. I mean, I do believe that those guys are really, in many ways, depend on those countries. They are bombing them, so they want to take legitimacy out of that.
Sure.
So that's where they operate. But in fact, they got no legitimacy over there,
mm-hmm.
and they hijack the whole scene. And for example, I mean, in Palestine, in Jerusalem, I mean, we lived together for years, thousands of years. We will not tolerate anybody. He will bring us or put us in a religious war, because religious war, this is completely, I don't believe, like, it just serves some people who are really having interest of, power, interest of money, and interest of destruction, and work for not for the interest of the local people, local community. So we have to be aware of such a fanatic group coming from here and there, and they got no roots. Where they come from, and how we, I mean, we are surprised, we are shocked to see them anyway on that region. So, I mean, how they all of a sudden became front, you know, headlines here and there. And it's a big question mark for us. And actually, through the history, like I said, thousands of years, we're living together, communities, groups, religions, etc. I mean, we never experienced such a fanatic, crazy mentality. And this is the big question coming from who these guys are serving.
Right.
This is one thing. Another thing's about the Palestinian issues. I mean, Palestine is not a conflict between religions. It's conflict between, you know, in many ways, colonialist power. It's that's the legacy of Great Britain domination of that region and cutting that region into pieces here and pieces there and give that guy a piece and the other guy another piece and etc. So the question of Palestine is really a colonial question, not a religious question.
Right.
And we do look at the solution to that question is by living together, Palestinian, Jewish, Israelis, everybody share that kind of land with equal rights in the front of the law, with a transparent system where, you know, everybody considered a citizen, everybody considered a human being, everybody treat equally. And we could go for a democratic, one-state democratic solution for everybody who are enjoying. I mean, in if we accepted that kind of system in Canada, like we live in a one state, one democratic Canadian entity, and we enjoy freedom and we enjoy democracy, so why that kind of model or style cannot be applied in Palestine? I mean, I don't believe so. I really don't see that. You know, those kind of models could work everywhere. And this is where we have to advocate and act and try to push that the Israeli and Palestinian live in one country equally. In no, I mean, religion or ethnicity, it shouldn't be any factor in confiscated your citizen rights or, you know, denying your freedom, etc. And we have to move. This is the way forward. And we've been living like that, actually, unfortunately, long before. And how we stuck into such a ethnic, religious war at the moment is, I do believe that it's a legacy from the colonialist era. And we have to, you know, get out of that and just share the land and move forward.
Yeah, but just to continue my little story there, that this Christian fellow, his friends, the people that he's talking to, are trying to convince him of the righteousness of their cause, and he continues to tell them, and he's a Christian, he's continuing to tell them that what they're doing is not according to Islam. And he can quote, he's knowledgeable enough, he can quote what Islam is all about. You're at odds with all these Islamic principles. You're not, this movement is not in accordance with Islam.
Yeah, those groups, which is I really can see clearly, that they not just abuse and use the religion for their own personal, you know, interest. Those guys are not respecting their own people, their own human, you know, they slaughter a lot of Iraqis and Syrians. You can imagine how, what is the number, like, I mean, tens of thousands being killed by those guys. I mean, they are not serving, they are not genuine phenomena. Those guys are just a bubble. And I do believe that once we arrange, or the region arrange itself in a very open, free way, they will get rid of them the people get rid of them. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, there's acquiesce in that region. And the bomb from here, and those guys from there, and the Syrian dictator regime from there. So those kind of situation create a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you can't treat those fundamentalist, extremist, whatever you can call them. But at the same time, we have to fight extremism all over. All over. I mean, you should not tolerate extremism coming from, this religion or that religion or that religion. And building countries or building states on basis on religions, that's an old-fashioned way to build any kind of a state. What we are asking for, and that what is the region is live for a long time, is people sharing. The land, sharing the responsibility, sharing the neighborhood. As I told you, my neighbor, I mean, I have a church just across the street from my place. It's been there for 2,000 years, this church. So, and that, and most of the cities in Palestine got that scene. So we will not just tolerate any groups who want to confiscate the religion, either Muslims or Jews or Christian, to use it in a purpose where they torture others, kill others, and they use it for hatred. And that shouldn't be the case. But unfortunately, as I said, we in that region, the people of that region, are not really controlling the scene. There is a lot of foreign intervention. There is a lot of foreign politics. There is a lot of things which is unclear. What's going on? Like you have no control, no say mm-hmm. in your business over there. But if you talk about the phenomena is ruthless, got no ground, and no support from the people. It's just a bunch of neighborhood guys maybe trying to show that they are willing and capable of committing this and that, and taking shots and videos and. Stuff like this, but mm-hmm. It's not really a genuine phenomenon, in my point of view.
Right. It just has no real basis in your reality at all. And from that point of view, you really have to question what Western governments are doing in there. Like, why are they there? What are they really trying to achieve?
This is where we talk about the Palestinian issue as the most important issue to be settled first, because this is the long last issue for lack of action, denial for Palestinian rights, and even supporting the Israeli policies toward declaring wars and confiscated the right of the Palestinians and denying the Palestinians rights and etc. So this is the starting point where we can re-correct the direction, and this is where the international community should impose sanction on Israel, as it's a very not respecting international law, international human rights standard, built on the basis of religion as the main issue for the states. This is where we have to act, and to open up and call Palestine and Israel as one state for all people who are living there as a citizen. And, it's the time for, you cannot really tolerate another examples like South Africa. And we should not. In the case of South Africa, they impose sanction. They start to take some drastic measures to mm-hmm. impose such a solution and settlement. And they have to act in Palestine. They have to show the Israelis that they are willing to lose if they are not going to obey the international law and order and the international resolution in the United Nations Security Council, etc. So there is a lack of action from the international community to find a solution to that one, mm-hmm. to that conflict. That's where in other part of that region, you will see here and there fanatic people using this conflict as a justifying purpose of committing crimes here and there, which is, in my point of view, it shouldn't. And those action is completely denounced by any Palestinian in large, you know. So in order to take that from the hand of the fanatic guys, we have to find a just solution to the Palestinian-Israeli question. We have to. Otherwise, I mean, you will not be convincing in that region. And though the fanatic will maybe grow and grow and became a threat to everybody, and why?
Looking kind of at the horizon here, maybe I'm being overly optimistic, but I seem to sense the pendulum swinging back. Perhaps in the United States, where, boy, it has to start coming back. But the politics there is very convoluted and confusing, and support for the Israeli state there is very strong. And so it's difficult in, like, the politics of the United States, where money is so important. They've got there's a lot of support, financial support, for what they're doing in Israel. So it's difficult to change the course there. We have a similar, although not as severe, sort of dynamic here in Canada. The support, we've heard our government say, and there's been declaration that Canada is Israel's best or ally, etc. And you have to wonder why that is and what's happening there. But again, I see the pendulum shifting, or swinging back the other way, and I think that's the only hope, because of these outside forces, I think, left to their own devices in Palestine, in Israel, left to their own devices. The people who actually live there would like things to become normal, would like things to become fair. And I think there are a lot of people in Israel who are horrified by what their governments are doing. But politically, it's so difficult to make the changes that are required.
Yeah, well, and the situation in Canada or in the United States is a little bit mixed here, because the sympathy for the Jewish cause and the Jewish people, and, I mean, against the Nazi is... I mean, everybody is denounced, you know, and everybody sympathizes.
Well, for
and,
sure, yeah.
Very hurt by those, tragic events in the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
But to mix it up with another story, like a colonial project, with the policies by the government, by other governments, it's, you know, this is something like that. It's not really acceptable. I mean, Israel is a state. A state, it's been occupying the Palestinian land for decades. Israel got a government, got an army, the most, the most strongest states in that region. Israel threat everybody over that region. So Israel is not really a tiny, small... No.
They have nuclear weapons. They have nuclear
region.
Weapons.
They have hundreds of nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
Israel is a superpower.
Yeah.
So when you talk about Israel, we are not really aiming or pointing the finger toward one religion or one... No. We talk about politics and policies by governments, you know. And what we are calling is sharing this land with all the people who live there. And instead of having this entity closed for, using another religion, using the religion to close it down and call it for us, for example, not to share the land with everybody who's living there. And continue on that path, denying the United Nations Security Council resolution and partitions and stuff like this. It's the time to change that kind of politics. And it's not against the Israeli civilians or the Israeli citizen, or, it's not. It's more about finding a better way to live in the future and move forward from such you know, like black and white story in South Africa, or you know, Jewish and Arabs or Muslims in Palestine, or in, it's not about you know, ethnicity. It's not about religion. It's much more about power and colonialism. It's much more about one state want to control the whole region, declaring, using justification like, you know, we've been victims in Europe, we've been here, we've been there. Those are valid, like the Jewish people being victims in Europe, yes, and being targeted in many countries, absolutely. But that doesn't mean that you have the right to you know, occupy other people, or you can use that terminology for your own, you know, military machines to bomb and kill and impose blockade in Gaza for years and years. That doesn't really make any sense. You know, way forward is way forward by making peace and by open up and by sharing, not by bomb.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way you will be secure. That's the only way we can go to the future with much more confidence and much more trust in the system. Then this is what we, how we lived for centuries, Jewish, Christian, Muslims, all together, we lived together without really a bloody conflict. I mean, if you don't know that the Middle East doesn't experience such a religious war like what they experienced in Europe in the Mid Ages, you know. In that region, people lived together for centuries peacefully, So this is what is our past, and this is what we are looking for the future to be, sharing and living together and just, you know, making peace.
You know, we're getting to the end of our time here, and what I take out of all our conversation, distilled down, I think that ordinary people like you and myself and our neighbors, the ordinary people in our countries, we have to pay more attention to what our governments are doing in foreign countries, whatever. Pay more attention to world events and make a statement. Tell our leaders that we've had enough violence. War does not solve anything. It lines the pockets of the very rich who are involved with producing munitions and weapons. And unfortunately, Canada is becoming more active in that theater, and I wish that would stop, but that's another issue. But I think common people, ordinary people, have to get together and tell our governments that changes need to be made. We can't sit back and let our government do the things that we basically don't agree with. And I can't see anyone who would think that what's happening now in Gaza, you know, they are unable to rebuild. They can't get materials with which to rebuild their houses, their hospitals, their schools, their infrastructure. They hardly have any power at all. Water is an issue. Everything's an issue there. Everyday life in Gaza is a struggle because of the ongoing conflict, and this should come to an end.
Yes, that's a very important the points you mentioned regarding the rebuilding of the destroyed houses and at least, you know, rebuild Gaza infrastructure. It's still, unfortunately, you just mentioned that the cement is not going into Gaza, the water shortage is still, the power shortage. I mean, everything, basic needs is still, and unfortunately, the key is in the hand of the Israelis. The key, they open it up whenever they want and they close it whenever they want. And what is bother them of letting the cement going into Gaza and letting the people rebuild their own lives, you know?
Yeah. With that, we've come to the end of our time. And I'm just going to finish off with what Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said: it's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness.